As a young lad, Paul Dragon was given his first bicycle, which gave him the freedom to explore the world. First in rural Nova Scotia, then as a road racer in Europe, and onto a life as an entrepreneur. Paul loves bikes. Everything about them. Wheels, spokes, tires, tubes, and valve stems, to name just a few of the many parts of a bicycle. He also loves being in business, being in control of his day, his destiny, negotiating leases, designing new equipment for bikes, embracing new technology, marketing, customer relations, and working with staff. In this episode of Careers That Matter, we meet a remarkable man who is helping to reshape urban transportation. Paul Dragon, you are the big wheel at Reckless Rider. I've been a customer of yours for probably close to a quarter century. How on earth does one become like a bicycle shop owner, business owner, someone who makes a contribution to changing the way in which we move around the city? Well, where did you start and how did you get into this business?
Well, I still shake my head sometimes too and go, I am in this business and I've been able to make a career out of it. I think I was like any other young boy who was interested in bicycles as a source of freedom. From there, I got interested in bicycles as a source of fitness and ultimately bike racing. And I started in rural Nova Scotia, interested in bikes, always interested in business. I always had a side hustle, a paper route, selling Christmas cards in July. I had a worm farm where I would sell worms to fishermen. So I had a business.
Perfect training ground for a bicycle.
Perfect training. Yeah, I had a business interest and I had a bicycle interest. And through that, I ended up in Europe bike racing. I was there for a number of years.
You did?
I did. Yeah, yeah.
You were a road racer.
I was headed for the Tour de France, and then I spent about 3 years there. And to cut it short, there's just so much drugs in that sport. There was, there is, there has been. That I looked at that and I said, this isn't sustainable for me, right? It's too hard a life to begin with, and now you throw in all kinds of substances, some of which were legal, some of which weren't legal. And I said, you know, I'm on my own here. I don't know what's right or wrong. I'm concerned about I might do something that would be detrimental to me. And I accomplished what I wanted to accomplish.
Okay, detrimental to you as far as your health is concerned?
As far as my health.
Or detrimental to you as your sense of self in the world and your commitment to fair play?
A little bit of both.
Yeah.
Look, any high performance athlete, we're all doing the same training.
Yeah.
Okay. And if you take the top 10 guys in the world in whatever sport, any one of those guys can win on any particular day. How are they winning and who's winning on that particular day? If you've all trained to the same ability, everybody's looking for an edge. So yeah. Maybe it's the way you have your breakfast that morning, or you don't eat breakfast, or you get up at 2 a.m. to eat breakfast when everyone's getting up at 6 a.m. to eat breakfast and yours is digested. It's an easy step to move on to some type of enhancement. Mm-hmm. So there's an incredible pressure to perform,
yeah.
Right? And to perform at all costs. And Stu, this was 35 years ago. Mm-hmm. There were no North American cyclists in Europe racing, or if
Other
there were,
Paul
there were a
Dragon.
Handful. There was Paul Dragon, there was Greg LeMond,
yeah.
There was a guy from Australia, there were a couple of guys from Ireland,
but there was no
English-speaking road team. We raced with the U.S. national team 1 year in Northern Italy, and that was the first time in 9 months that I spoke English to anybody, right? And it was just neat to meet those guys there at that point in time. But through that, now I ended up in Northern Italy. I'm introduced to some adults, real men in the bicycle business, are wearing nice suits, they're driving Alfa Romeros, they're going out to have lunch at a nice restaurant. They have a secretary, they have an office. I go, wow.
There's actually a business.
There's a business here. I didn't know that existed. So that's what...
Really? All those years Wow.
We, at that point in time, Stu, in rural Nova Scotia, you would go to this guy's house who used to fly to Europe and you would put your order in and 6 weeks later would come back, or you'd go look at his basement and point to a rim or a saddle or something and go, I'd buy that. So it wasn't till I got to Europe that I clued in there was an industry around it. And my very first foyer into the bike business was I met the distributor for a line of bicycle tires from Northern Italy. I convinced them to let me be their Eastern Canadian importer. I went home to Nova Scotia. I went to the Royal Bank. I said, I need a loan for $2,500. They said, what do you have? I said, I've got two purebred husky dogs and a bicycle that's worth this amount of money. And whether the bank manager knew my dad or not and phoned him on the side, but they gave me the money. And that's what got me into the world of selling bicycle parts.
Major investment of $2,500.
Major investment of $2,500.
And you bought a bunch of tires.
Bought a bunch of tires, sold them out of the back of my car.
Who to? If you didn't have a network of bicycle stores to sell them to, who did you sell them to?
Well, you sold them to the guys who were bike racing.
So you had to go out and find them. You had to
well,
find
they
your
found
market.
Me. They found me.
Because the word spread.
Because I was a guy back from Europe with this load of bicycle tires, and you could get them faster and cheaper from me than you could from
anyone else.
Anyone else, right? Yeah. Unless you came to Vancouver or Montreal, where there was an actual bicycle store that you could walk into and buy stuff.
So, okay. So you graduate from your first load, you make a bit of money.
That's right. I made some money, right? Then I said, okay, you know what? I'm going to go live in Vancouver because Nova Scotia is a beautiful spot, but it was a little limiting for me, perhaps, after I'd spent time in Europe and mm-hmm. you know, I was my own guy there and doing my own thing. So I ended up in Vancouver. Didn't have any plans of being in the bicycle business at that point in time. I thought I was going to work for a while and then go back to school. And then I got a summer job at a bike store in the West Side called West Point Cycle.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, I realized I'm getting paid to talk to people about bicycles. And this, for me, was like amazing that someone would pay me to do this.
Were you still importing bicycles?
No,
tires?
At that point I wasn't, right? Because I had made the switch. I thought I might do it, but I had my sort of, I was trying to find my new legs in Vancouver, and I could only take on so much. And of course, the weekly wage at the bike store was money in my pocket immediately, whereas the tire business was money in my pocket 6 months down the road.
Hopefully. Yeah.
Hopefully. Yeah. I did that for a year, and I thought, wow, this is terrific. And then I got laid off. And I couldn't believe that I got laid off at the end of the summer. It never even crossed my mind that someone would hire me just to fill a position. And that experience was etched in my mind after that. I said, I'm never going to have that happen to me again. Mm-hmm. I am never going to be the guy who gets laid off, right? And from there, I went on, and I met some guys at the time who wanted to open a bike store. They had no bike store experience, but they could see that this bicycle segment of the sporting goods was growing. So we
this bicycle thing,
right? Yeah. So we put our heads together and found a location, and that location on 2nd and Fur near Granville Island. We've been there now for 33 or 34 years.
Yeah.
That building was the original Mountain Equipment Co-op retail store. Wow. When they first started back in 78 with their first real store, that's the building we were in. So,
well, that's where I first met you.
Right.
Yeah.
Yep. So we were
in the late 80s, early 90s.
That's correct.
Like that. Yep.
Mid to late 80s. We were pioneers at that point in time, Stu.
Yeah.
We were selling mountain bikes, where lots of people were still selling a road bike.
The classic
road bike.
Yeah.
And then B, we were on the cutting edge of the triathlon world.
Yeah.
So, and I was doing triathlons at that point in time, and it was a brand new industry, and I was the right age at the right time, and that really helped us get established in the city, and it's probably what we're most famous for. If I'll meet someone who goes, Paul, you know, I know you from 33 years ago, we did a triathlon together, and so being athletic certainly was helpful, having that interest and that desire to run a business and to see how a business worked.
Okay, but everything that you've told me up to this point really didn't equip you to be a business owner or operator.
No,
because
no.
It's far more complex than saying,
that's
I'm
right.
going to bring
yep.
in a load of tires yep. and sell them.
That's correct.
Now all
yep.
of a sudden you need all those parts, you need location, you need leases, and on and on and on.
Yep.
What was that education for you like? And it sounds to me like it was, you threw yourself into it and you just made your mistakes and learned.
That's
as you
right.
went.
It was, you threw yourself into it. There was a belief in yourself that you could make this work. And I think because of my athletic background, I realized that training and planning was incredibly important, and that dedication to the process, that if you worked hard at it and you set some goals, that you could either achieve them or come close to achieving them.
Mm-hmm.
A course in sports are setbacks. A course in business are setbacks. So you're right. I got in. I did some stuff right. I did some stuff wrong. Sometimes I did the same thing wrong three times before I learned.
Yeah, well, people would say, will say to me, how come you made the same mistake twice? And I go, well, I didn't recognize it.
That's correct.
It was wearing sunglasses.
Yeah.
It's hard.
Sure.
It is hard.
Yep.
Okay, good. There's a coming wave. Well, now you got competition and you got all kinds of other things. You got to have staff.
Yep.
You got to learn how to manage your taxes and on and on and on.
I think
and you can't go to school to learn how to do this.
To me, Stu, I became a student of retail.
Yeah.
And I became a student of what I would call self-improvement or self-betterment.
Mm-hmm.
So I would take an entry-level accounting course from the Vancouver Night School thing at the time, or I would go to a retail workshop on inventory management, or I would pick up a book on leasing commercial space. So for me, what I liked about it, Stu, was that I felt I was in control of my destiny. That as
you weren't going to get laid off.
I wasn't going to get laid off.
Yeah.
I might not have any money. I might have to work really, really hard.
I'm sure you went through a whole bunch of those times.
I've been through so many cash flow crises but the great thing about that is that self-discovery is that you do learn.
Yeah.
And once maybe it took you three times to learn it, but now that's in your brain. And you go, oh, I see this coming. I'm not going down that path again. I know what the result is at the end of the road if I do this.
Yeah.
So I'm going to do something different. So, you know, I've had up to five stores at one point. We went from one to two to four to five. And then that was too much for me. I had them on the island. I was trying to manage them from Vancouver on the island.
Yeah.
That's a whole different story.
Because that's not enough scale.
That's
five stores isn't enough.
No.
Yeah.
No. And so, you know, I've done different things over the years. We've sold different product. We have our own product line called the RecTech that we started building 30 years ago with a bicycle frame. And what we've built has changed, but the fact that it comes from us hasn't. And, you know, now, over 30 years now I make it look easy. Okay, now they go, you know what, that guy knows what he's doing. I make it look easy because I worked hard at it, and it's not easy.
No, it doesn't look easy to me.
It is not easy.
I come into your shop and I go, okay, like, you've done an awful lot of really interesting engineering to get the absolute maximum out of that space that you've got.
Sure.
I mean, you've got to climb a ladder to get to your office.
Ladder to the office, you know, electronic hoists to get the bikes up and down.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you learn that stuff, Stu. You learn that retail space can kill your operation. And I learned somewhere, a fellow said to me, he goes, Paul, if you have a 1,000 square foot store and you're a retailer, you will fill it full of stuff. If you expand that store to 3,000 square feet, you will fill that full of stuff too. Are you going to do more sales out of 3,000 than 1,000? Maybe you will, maybe you won't, but you're certainly going to spend more on inventory. You're certainly going to spend more on staff. So those little nuggets of information that stick in your mind. Stu, I've been buying bicycles now for close to 35 years, and we buy them in September or October, and we start to sell them in April or May. I'm still not getting it 100% right.
Yeah.
I will never get it 100% right. But our goal, and this is what I tell my managers, is we just try to get a little more right than we were the year before.
Mm-hmm.
Our goal is just to be a little bit better if we can, a little bit better. And we know we're not going to get it right, but we think we can do, with the knowledge that we learned this year, we can be a little bit better next year. That's
so
all.
Is there a typical day for you? And if so, what does it look like?
We have the season and we have not the season, or right. The on season and the not on season. So in the on season, I'm at the store by 9-10 o'clock. I'm up and down my ladder 1,000 times a day. If we're busy on the floor, I'm on the floor. I may be riding my bike to one of my other stores. So an example of what you learn, I had stores in Victoria. That was a real challenge for me to get back and forth. After I closed those, I said, if I ever open a store again, I'm going to be able to ride my bike to it. So we went from, at that point, two stores. We added an e-bike store about 3 years ago, yes, or 5 years ago. But the qualification was, I have to be able to ride my bike to it. Otherwise, it's not for me.
Well, it wasn't very far from your Marina Side location.
No, it was perfect, right? And it's in between there and the First Street location, right? Yeah. But so anyhow, you learn what works for you. So I may ride my bike over to one of the stores, deliver something, talk to the guys. But, you know, the best part for me after all these years is being on the retail sales floor, is talking to you, is talking to someone else. That face-to-face experience is terrific. Ever since the internet came out, the demise of retail, brick and mortar, has been predicted. Every year there was something that was going to put us out of business, a traditional store. Mm-hmm. We're still here. We're doing things differently, but that face-to-face communication with a client, everybody likes that.
Wow, especially around a bicycle. It's such a personal thing. Some young guys watching this right now going, I want to be the Paul Dragon of the future. It's going to be even harder for them to follow your path. But let's say you want to get into that business, or they're the person who wants to take over what you're doing. Mm-hmm. What do you think is most important for them to set their mind on as they start in their career so they're in a position to be able to take on that kind of challenge?
So two things. Number one, if you're in the retail business, it's long hours.
Yep.
You have to be prepared. We may be open for 10 hours and we'll do all our business within 45 minutes for that day. However, we don't know when that 45 minutes is going to be. So you have to be prepared to put in some hours in that store. Now, someone coming up now is completely different than me growing up because they've grown up in the digital world. They've grown up in the online world.
Mm-hmm.
They could take a business like mine and go, you know what? He's got a great business there, but I'm going to take it to the next level. I'm going to do this with it. I'm going to put an interactive component in there or something like that.
Yeah. But they're also moving into a marketplace that now exists. You helped to create that marketplace.
Yeah, you have to want to do it, okay? And it's not me in the bicycle business. It's you in your business. It's my friends in the restaurant business. It's my buddy who sells high-end automobiles. He has to want to do it,
yeah.
Right? So I wanted to do something, and I wanted to do something where I felt I had control over what I was doing. I wanted to do something that I felt would make a difference because I know that bicycle changed my life. It changed my life in a positive method. I see people like you who ride your bike and you go, Paul, this is great. I am so happy I'm riding my bike. I see people who came in at 280 pounds and come back a year later at 180 pounds and go, this has been the best thing I've ever done. Thank you so much. We get people here from all over the world who come and rent a road bike from me and come back gushing about what a great city we live in and how people are so respectful on the highways and how many bike lanes we have. Well, I'm part of that. I'm part of that. And I always maintain, Stu, that I don't care what city you live in, it's better when you can ride a bike in that city. And it's that simple.
It reminds me of that saying that I recently read. Everything's better after a bike ride.
For sure. Yeah. Yeah.
Everything.
Yeah, everything is, right? Yeah. And it's a very small thing, but it's a very big thing, right? And once you have that bicycle in your life, it becomes part of your life, and you don't have that relationship with almost any other consumer good that you own, okay? Relationship with your camera. It's a nice camera. It works. But when a better one comes out, you're ditching that one,
right?
And you're getting the new one. You're not ditching your bike.
No,
you like your bike.
Yeah.
You like your bike. That bike means something to you.
Well, the places I've been with it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. The memories you have on that bike.
Yeah.
Right? And that's what's phenomenal about it. Right?
I'm like you. I never went off and competed or anything like that, but I'm like you. I remember when I started riding a bicycle, I was about 5 years of age, and it was like my world expanded.
It opens up. Yeah.
And it's never stopped.
Yeah. And it still does.
Yeah.
So you and I can leave here tomorrow and take our bikes to any city in the world. And I guarantee you that the 5 days we're in that city is going to be so much more enhanced by the fact that we have a bicycle.
Yeah.
I can guarantee it.
Oh, and the distances you can travel. I could go on and on about this because I love bicycles and I appreciate you and what you bring to the landscape here in Vancouver. So thank you for coming in and sharing.
And thank you. Thank you very much.
Thanks.